Most companies in the advanced nuclear space focus on perfecting their design on paper before attempting to raise funds for a prototype. However, while most companies are going in this direction, one company in Denmark is already conducting testing of various components and is developing commercial products to sell into the market. Our guest today tells us more about his company in this very exclusive interview. I'm Sean Kenny, and this is Rock Logic. Welcome to Rock Logic. I am your host, Sean Kenny, and today we have a very special guest. He is the co-founder and chairman of Copenhagen Atomics, a company with a radically different approach to building and testing components for molten salt reactors, with the end goal of mass-producing MSRs in the near future. I am joined today by Thomas Jan Petersen of Copenhagen Atomics. Thomas, thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you, and thank you for having me.
Of course, it's our pleasure, sir. I've actually done a fair bit of reading into your company, and I'm very impressed with the amount of progress you've been able to accomplish in a relatively short time. Before we get into the weeds here, I just wanted to just ask if you could give us a little bit of your background in the industry and just tell us a little about what Copenhagen Atomics is all about.
Yeah, sure. I was born in Denmark, and I've lived here many years, but I also lived in the States for over two times, approximately 2 years in total. I'm trained as an engineer. I went to TU of Austin, University of Texas at Austin, I think it's called. So I'm an engineer, and I had the good fortune to work in IT and software development and mathematical modeling for many years, and then I started getting interested in the energy space, and I worked for one of the biggest utilities here in Denmark on some energy projects, and that got me even more interested. And then this was about the time that I found out about thorium energy, and I thought, this sounds really cool. Well, to be honest, in the beginning, I actually thought it was a scam, or, you know, not the real truth. It took me some time before I realized how big an opportunity this is for humanity. And when I started to realize that, I met with some other people here in Copenhagen, and we started to discuss what this would mean for humanity, because we can get back to that. But then, long story short, in 2014, we started Copenhagen Atomics, and it was a little bit difficult to figure out. So always from the very first day we started, we said we want to make thorium molten salt reactors on an assembly line. We need to mass manufacture this. It doesn't make any sense to build 10 reactors. Who cares? I mean, we have to build at least 1,000, and better if we can build 1,000,000 reactors. That's when it starts to matter for humanity. So this is really what we've set out to do. And this has been our goal all the way from the beginning. And this is still our goal, of course. But we haven't even built one reactor. But we can get back to the details of why and how, and, you know, what's the next steps and so on. So we are a team here of approximately 25 people now, working on this every day. And it's great fun to actually bring a very promising technology to the market.
Very exciting stuff. And we certainly will be getting into the details here. As a matter of fact, that was going to be my next question. So as you know, Thomas, there are several private and public endeavors around the world that are looking to build advanced reactors. And there are actually quite a few startups that are looking to build molten salt reactors. With all that said and done, what is it about Copenhagen Atomics that sets you apart from what everyone else is doing in terms of their approach?
Yeah, so, there are many people out there who are doing different things. So I think it's, we are similar to some of the teams and very different from other teams. But if you look at the startups who are doing molten salt reactors, you will see that most of these startups, they start by doing a paper design of a commercial reactor. That's their main focus in the beginning. And very few of them talk about optimized assembly line production. And I guess it's because they think, let's get one reactor online and then let's think about how we build the next one, where we are different in that respect. So we're thinking about mass production already from the beginning. And as you would know, there's many people who said, oh, okay, let's just go and get some off the shelf components and assemble this reactor and get it up and running. And then we just need the approval. But it's not that easy, because there a lot of the components that you would use for a molten salt reactor is simply not available off the shelf. And even if you talk to specialty companies and try to get them to make a customized part for you, they don't know. They don't have any experience with running fluoride salts at 700 degrees or whatever. So, so it's not, you can't even go to like companies that make pumps and say, oh, okay, I want another type of pump. We actually tried that early on. So we said, okay, we're from Denmark. Denmark has had a really terrible history with nuclear power. We've never had nuclear power. We were about to build a power plant back in the 70s, but that got canceled. We have a few research reactors, but they have been shut down by now. And the government has always been kind of not pro-nuclear. So it's a bad place to start building nuclear technology, because basically there is no infrastructure for that. And that's also why we thought, okay, now we're quite small, or in the beginning we're quite small and we don't have enough money. So let's start building stuff and testing stuff with this high temperature fluoride salts, because we can do that. There's no restrictions in that way. And we can actually build an entire reactor, as long as we don't start the chain reaction, as long as we only test it with no reactive materials, or even if we test it with the fluoride or thorium or uranium salts, we can also do that, because as you know, thorium and uranium is not very radioactive. So we can actually get very far without getting the approvals. And that has been our approach from the beginning, that we want to build stuff and test it and make sure it works before we do the approval process. And the reason we chose to do that is because we looked at the traditional nuclear industry and we saw that if they just want to change a little thing, then it costs $1 million. And we think that when you want to develop a new technology, there will be many things you would like to change and optimize. And if it costs $1 million every time, you know, it's difficult to find investors, at least in Europe, who are willing to fund that. But I would also say that things are changing now. And very soon we are going to build or get approvals for reactors. So we will also go into this game of spending a lot of money on approvals and approval agencies. And we actually right now starting to talk to a number of companies or countries to see, you know, where would it be best for us to start our first test reactor? And that's the second thing. So many of these startups that are also building molten salt reactors, they start with a commercial reactor that is going to produce electricity for the grid right away. The first reactor we want to build is going to be a small reactor, a test reactor that is only supposed to run for a short amount of time, maybe a couple of months. And the reason we want to build that is to get something online fast and learn. It's basically only a learning experience. And then, of course, while we're getting that online, we're also designing the commercial reactor. And there, because we chose that route, we're the only startup company in the world in molten salt reactors that are actually testing pumps and heat exchangers in the right size that is actually going to go into a reactor. Whereas many of the other are doing a lot of simulations and a documentation for the approval. And of course, we still have to do that, but we are way ahead of them in terms of testing hardware.
Interesting. So just to make sure I got this clear, so the main takeaway here is you're actually building and testing components as well as heat exchangers and various materials that would be used in a molten salt reactor. In addition to testing those components first, are you also looking to sell those components to other companies, or are you just doing this for your own efforts, or is it a little bit of both?
So about, I think, 3-4 years ago, it was still a struggle for all the startup companies. And we said it's if everybody has to do everything, like if everybody has to develop a pump or valve or whatever, it's going to take a long time because all these startups companies have a difficulty raising enough money. So we thought it would be better also for national labs and universities to have access to some of these things. And then we decided to, we built these test loop that we use internally for testing. And we decided to also sell those. Of course, a test loop is not a reactor.
No.
And the components that go into a test loop are similar to what you would use in a reactor, but they are not approved. So there's a heat exchanger there, and there's a pump there, and there's some salt, but it's none of those have been approved for a reactor. So you could say it's a very capable test platform, but it's not components for your actual reactor. And to be honest, I maybe we could manufacture the pump and sell that to some of the other companies. But I think we are more selling components that can be used for the research and development phase. We also sell like clean salts because you need clean salts in order to run these loops and avoid corrosion. So because we have ahead of the other companies in this respect, we're trying to sell these components. But to be honest, most of the customers are so far actually all of our customers are universities and national labs. So we're not selling to the other startup companies yet, but there has been discussions, and I think eventually we will sell some stuff. When you look at the Oak Ridge research back in the 60s, they built, 20, 30, 40 different types of flow loops to test all the different things they wanted to test back then. And I could easily see that in order to get this new molten salt reactor industry up and running and actually manufacture stuff on assembly lines, if we are going to take on the oil and gas industry, basically we need 1 million people working in this new industry. And we are very far away from that right now. But all those people need training, and that's where the universities and national labs come in, and they need tools to do that training. And for example, our molten salt test loops are a perfect tool for training and testing and doing different setups. And in this case, you don't have to start from scratch. You can actually start something that work from day one.
Yeah, and it's pretty accessible. I actually saw one of your test loops on sale over at Amazon. Are you guys still selling through Amazon?
Yeah, it's quite expensive. It's $88,000 for the base model. So to be honest, we haven't sold anything through Amazon. But I think it's more like a gimmick. But we get quite a few people who contact us directly and interested. And most people who contact us, they are interested in customized versions. So
For sure.
they want special heat exchangers or a pump with a certain flow rate or stuff like that. So it's not. Yeah, there's a long dialogue before we actually ship the loop to them.
Oh, for sure. I understand. Still, that's really cool stuff. So while you're doing this, obviously, your end goal is, of course, to get to commercial reactors. I guess while we're on the subject, is there anything specific about the reactor? I mean, is it a true thorium reactor, or is it running on spent fuel, or can it run on a multitude of different fuels? I guess tell us a little about your reactor, sir.
So, when you look at the different, again, the different startups and different reactor designs out there, there's several groups that say that we can make a fast reactor, we can also make a thermal reactor, and this reactor can run on thorium, it can also run on uranium. And so people are not, or at least some of the companies are not very specific about what they want to do. And I guess that's because the difficult thing here is not the fuel, it's to get the whole thing approved and get it online and make it economic and all that. And it so for the first two reactors or whatever, it doesn't really matter whether you run it on enriched uranium or you run it on thorium or you run it on spent nuclear fuel. Of course, the approval process and the simulations and all that vary a little depending on what you choose. But this is not the important thing for the first few reactors. Where thorium is important is in the long term, because we all know that with the uranium, like enriched uranium, for example, you cannot make a breeder in thermal spectrum. So you're always gonna have to do enrichment, and enrichment is expensive. First of all, you need to dig up a lot more uranium than you need, and then you enrich it, so you take out most of the remaining 238. And then you put that into a reactor, and then you get this nasty waste afterwards that is not, well, it's not that nasty, but a lot of governments doesn't like it. And then you would always have to do the enrichment, which is very expensive and very delicate process, and it also has the proliferation risk. And thorium is the only material that can make it possible to do a thermal breeder. And of course, I don't think anybody expect the first reactor or the second or the third reactor to be a breeder because that's difficult to achieve, but it is possible. And that's what's the key here, because of course you can also make breeders in fast spectrum, and you can also make waste burners in fast spectrum. But the problem there is that we humans have built something like 500 thermal reactors, and most of those worked right away. And they built them all the way back in the 40s and 50s with, they didn't even have computer simulations and stuff like that. They were really crude reactors, and they worked right away. And they had, to be honest, there was not a lot of problems with those reactors. But then later on in the 60s and 70s, we started building fast reactors. And to date, we humans have built more than 20 different types of fast reactors. And none of them have really worked the way they were supposed to. All those programs have been shut down. To my knowledge, the most successful one might have been the Russian BN-600 reactor, which is still running, but it's they're very secretive about it. And you know, to be honest, I don't know if it's if even that reactor is ready for mass deployment. And then, so you look at that and say, okay, so if we're gonna build something really simple and rocket that we can mass manufacture, you know, would you want to build a thermal reactor that, you know, we humans have already built hundreds and hundreds of those and they all worked? Or do you want to build fast reactors where we built, 20, 30, whatever, and none of them really worked like they were supposed to? I think there's a big technology risk in doing fast reactors. And also the next thing is that in fast reactors, you need much more fissile fuel per megawatt hour you produce. So this problem of having enough fissile fuel, it's a problem because, you know, every time we start 20 reactors, the fast reactor guys can only start one. And in the, I mean, what is going to pay for this whole thing in the end is the energy that you sell. So, you know, I know that it doesn't calculate directly, but, you know, essentially we could, for the same amount of input fuel, we can sell 20 times more electricity. But it's not exactly like that, but that's, that kind of gives you an idea of why we chose thermal reactors. And then, and thorium is really a chance here because you can dig thorium out of the ground and then you can use another kickstarter fuel in the beginning until you start to have accumulated enough uranium-233 to run on that. In the beginning, you can use spent nuclear fuel. The plutonium in spent nuclear fuel is a very good kickstarter fuel. So I think the message to the public is that we can actually do something about this spent nuclear fuel that all the politicians are worried about. And if we're lucky, we get paid to take it. I mean, we get money from them to take it and burn it and reduce the amount of years that it needs to be stored. And then at the same time, we have fuel to start our thorium reactors. It would, of course, be great if we could start the reactors on uranium-233. But there's not a lot of that. There's a little bit in the US and maybe a little bit in Russia. But the chance that we as a startup companies can get our hands on that is, I think, very limited.
Yeah, it's hard to get. And we do have quite a bit of spent fuel here in the United States. I think about something like around 80,000, maybe 83,000 metric tons and rising. So if you want to take some off our hands, Tom, we'd be happy for that. Very cool stuff, by the way. It's very exciting. It seems like you're on your way to getting to that pretty near term. I guess, what have been the toughest challenges to achieving your goals? Because you have been a little bit more hands-on with your approach than some of the other efforts that have been going on. I guess, what are the, is it mostly regulatory or have you been having some engineering challenges with your work?
So we have only talked, had introduction meetings with regulatory, or approval agents, until now, because, we don't want to start, the approval process yet. So we haven't delved too deep into that, and I'm sure we will run into a lot of trouble there. So what we focused on so far is building stuff and getting up and running. And you should imagine that fluoride salts are really corrosive, especially if you have oxygen. And of course, if you run things at 700 degrees, all the steel is glowing red hot. So it's a tough environment. And, you know, we're kind of building this stuff from scratch because there's very few components that we can go out there on the shelf and buy. It's a little bit like when they built the first computer, for example. I mean, when IBM built the first personal computer, they needed a mouse, they needed a keyboard, they needed a screen, they needed a hard disk, whatever. And all those components were not available. So they had to find out ways to do that. And this is also what we're doing. So I mean, yeah, there's a lot of engineering in getting all that stuff up and running and working well. Mm. And this is what we've been doing so far. But it's not impossible challenges. I would say that one of the challenges in the beginning was that it was difficult to get enough funding. So we were moving too slow, but this is of course much better now. But even like when we 5 years in like in 2025, if we look back in time to now in 2020, I think we would also say that we had too little money back then. We should have moved faster. Yeah, it's always like that when you bring a new technology to market. There's this pressure to get it out there quickly.
Well, I certainly feel like you're on the right track here. And I mean, seeing as we're on the subject, are you looking to have your first prototype built by 2025 or maybe even a little sooner than that?
Yes. So we already now testing the components for what we call the prototype or the non-fission prototype, which is a one-to-one scale of a 1 megawatt test reactor. And so we're already testing those components and building more and more into one big unit. And before the end of 2022, we will have that finished. So basically we have a full scale 1 megawatt test reactor, but then we don't have the approvals to actually turn it on. Mm. And then, you know, in parallel with that, we will start the negotiations or talks with the approval agencies. And then hopefully by 2025, we'll be able to turn it on and have it up and running. And then in parallel with that, we are going to start designing the commercial reactor as well. So yeah, we are already doing those things. And to be honest, I think we will build we are starting to build 10 test loops in parallel. So that just shows you that we're testing many different things in parallel. And I could easily see that we would have 30 loops running at the point in time when we also have the first 1 megawatt test reactor ready.
Well, I mean, that's, again, you're making some great progress here, and I'm very impressed with the work that you've done, Thomas. I'll just ask this one last question here. When you do finally build the reactor, are you hoping to build one in your home country of Denmark, or are there other countries that you're looking at in terms of building? I mean, you said you're in discussions with them, but is there a particular country that you have your sights on?
Well, first of all, like you asked about Denmark, the thing is, in Denmark, we don't have an approval agency. And if we were to build anything and start it here, we would need an approval. And we would also need the fuel, and our country doesn't have any agreements with any of the countries who have fuel supply. So all that would have to be in place. And I think simply just the time it'll take for the politicians to get that on the way, it would be time wasted. So it would be much easier for us to take one of the neighbor countries. For example, Sweden is our neighbor country. They've had nuclear power for many, many years, and they can supply fuel. One of the other countries that we've talked to quite a bit is the Netherlands. And the Netherlands also have fuel supply, and they have an approval agency. But again, in those two countries, for example, the approval agencies are not really ready to approve nuclear or molten salt reactors. They still need training, and they still need to find out what can they actually approve. They haven't decided on that, so they need to look into that. And other countries is US and Canada. A lot of things are happening in the US and Canada, and they have even more experience in nuclear technology. So there's a number of possibilities, and of course there's 31 countries who have commercial nuclear power today. And I think those 31 countries would probably be first choice before we think about Denmark. But
for sure. Well, Thomas, again, it's been great having you on the show. Do you have any final words or any final thoughts before we sign off here today?
Yeah, I want to mention one thing. This is what drives us as a team, is that if you look back in the history of humans and the possibilities we've had here on this planet, that every time we got access to additional energy resources, we have developed our society in a way that were better for most people. And I mean, if you look at most of the countries in Europe, for example, 100 years ago, the majority of people in Europe were working on farms, producing food. And it just took a lot more effort back then. But now we all have these great lives where we have cars and washing machines and whatnot, airplanes and everything. And I think if we can provide a lot more energy, then we will see a transition again where suddenly it becomes, there's a lot of new things that becomes possible for us humans. And one of the things, when you look at different countries and you look at people inside those countries, then even the rich people who are using a lot of energy just in their everyday lives, but also to get a lot of products manufactured that they use, even those people who use the most energy in the countries who use the most energy, they also want to use more energy. So it just goes to tell you that energy is a key if you want to have a very prosperous life style. And I really think that thorium is an opportunity that, you know, it's the biggest opportunity in my lifetime to make a big difference in what it means to be human on this planet. And this is why we're working on this, and not only me, but the entire team. So we are really, we think it's great to get an opportunity to work on something like this. This is something like on par with the internet or the airplane or something like that. It's a technology that we really need to bring forward so that it can help a lot of people get a more prosperous life.
I could not agree with you more, and you took the words right out of my mouth. But I got to say, you know, with a few people who are working on this, Thomas, you've been doing fantastic work. And all I can say right now at this point is thank you for everything that you've done and all the work that you and your team over at Copenhagen are going to do. So again, just thank you, and yeah, just keep up the good work, sir.
Yeah, you too. I mean, we are all in this together. We need to bring this to life.
Awesome. Well, that's all. That's all for today. That was Thomas Jan Petersen from Copenhagen Atomics. You know, if you have any questions or if you want to find out more, we'll have a link on Copenhagen Atomics description on below. Again, this was Rock Logic. I'm your host, Sean Kenny. Good day. Hey, thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you liked it, we'd really appreciate it if you subscribed and rated it 5 stars on whatever platform you're listening on. We're a new podcast trying to reach new people, and every bit of support counts. Also, we cross-post every podcast episode on YouTube. So if you want to see charts and other visual aids to go along with the content, or just my beautiful face, feel free to check us out there.